हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
So continuing with the Vedic sacrifice aimed at the supreme, the threefold goal of Vedanta is infallible. Right? Because that was before, the Vedic sacrifice does not rise above the influence of three modes, is fallible. These three words are taken from Vedic hymns. Om ityetat brahmano nidishtam nama, Rig Veda, indicates the first goal. Then tattvamasi, Chandogya Upanishad 6:8-7, indicates the second. And Sadeva Saumya, Chandogya Upanishad 6:2-1, indicates the third goal. Combined, they become Om Tat Sat. Formerly, when Brahma, the first created living entity, performed sacrifices, he indicated by these three words the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In all such activities, it is recommended that one vibrate Om Tat Sat. The words sadbhave and sadubhave indicate the transcendental situation. Acting in Krishna consciousness is called sattva, and one who is fully conscious of the activities of Krishna consciousness is called sadhu. So in other words, whatever is connected to the Lord then becomes special. And if it's not, then, you know, it's nice, but it's not special.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Why is the word gold mentioned in connection to the first, the second, and the third usually?
Well, because they're probably what you're trying to obtain too. You know, just like when we say sambandha, but to understand that we're eternal servant of Krishna, and, you know, we're not this body, eternal servant of Krishna, is the first thing we're trying to establish. So you can say that's the first goal.
Okay.
Right? And then to engage in the Lord's service, that would be the second. And then to obtain prema, that's the third. Like that. Of course, in the spiritual world, there is no such thing as creation. But since the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Vedanta Sutra, is the source of all emanations, that conception is explained. Notes, quotation from Srila Prabhupada. So, on account of Krishna's bodily rays, the whole creation is coming out. That is, Krishna's inconceivable power, Brahma Jyoti. Janmadyasya yata, atato Brahma Jigyasa. The Vedanta Sutra, you have to inquire about the Param Jyoti, Brahma Jyoti, and from that Param Jyoti, everything is coming out. Right? So this whole creation is coming from the bodily rays of the Lord. Right? Because like here, that's what pervades everything. Because you have dead matter, so it's the Brahma Jyoti that's pervading everything. The Brahman is pervading everything. So it's the brilliance of Krishna's qualities. So what's actually pervading everything is Krishna's qualities. Right? So that's why it's attractive. That's why it works. That's why it does.
Can you say there's no dead matter then?
No, the dead matter's there. But what makes the dead matter attractive or function is Krishna's Brahma Jyoti.
No, if we say that Krishna's Brahma Jyoti is everything.
No, it's pervading everything.
Where's the place for dead matter?
No, dead matter is the form of Brahman that it is, but there's different varieties of Brahman. Right? So, in other words, you have internal potency, external potency, and Jiva as the three kinds of Brahman, right? But then Krishna is also Brahman. He's the supreme Brahman. But that Brahman has three features, right? So Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So as Brahman, he pervades everything. So the external Brahman, though unconscious, appears to be attractive to the living entity because of the Lord pervading it as Brahmajyoti. No, Brahmajyoti is Brahman. Yeah. But Brahmajyoti, you're talking about the effulgence of that.
The effulgence of his toenails.
Toenails, his qualities, like that. I mean, it's anything about it. So the thing is, the effulgence is also, you know, carrying those qualities, but they're not personalized. You know what I'm saying? Krishna is great, but greatness, Brahman will be carrying greatness. But it's Krishna's greatness, but greatness is not the fun. Where's the form of it? How do you understand it's great? You know, we'll say something's great because of some aspect of it being personalized, where it's very big or very powerful or very qualified or very, you know, something significant. Does that make sense?
Also means that Krishna doesn't. There's no original bad qualities, just lack of the good ones.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's all we're dealing with.
So there's no bad qualities.
Yeah, but it's the good quality that's Krishna. So the lack of Krishna, that's the is seen as the bad. You know what I'm saying? Because it's still a lack of. I mean, someone's an atheist only because there's no theism. Right, so his position of atheism is still based upon the Lord, whether he exists or not. That's another thing. You know what I'm saying? But it's still based on the Lord. So he's still drawing his potency from the Lord. It's not a separate. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know. So if you say something's dirty, it lacks cleanliness. So the more it lacks cleanliness, it's the dirtier it is. You know? Is that, yeah. So what we're looking for is that quality, that superior quality, because that's Krishna. Is that, yeah. So that's pervading everything.
So Maharaj, the bad qualities itself, I mean, they are based on the good qualities, but the lack of Krishna, I mean, there's no such thing as the devil in that case.
No. It's not. It's just that that's just the officer that's carrying out, but they can't work all these things out. You know? So therefore they come up with all kinds of interesting little philosophies. Like that. It means this, in other words, with the mundane intelligence, we're trying to explain God and this creation. So it won't work. So then, because it doesn't make sense, it seems to be contradictory. So then they'll come up with these ways to assuage. I think their doubts. You know, so then it seems to make sense that, well, you know, God is great, he does everything perfect, so things that aren't going perfect and there's so much trouble, somebody else must be doing that. But it is, someone else is taking care of that, but the idea that that person is working on their own potency, their own power, that's not correct. That's a problem. So we're simply trying to bring out that it's the Krishna consciousness that makes everything perfect. These other elements are details within that. It means connecting it to Krishna. So what are you going to connect? You're going to connect the... So in other words, something's dirty. So what's the problem with it? It's because it lacks cleanliness. Like Krishna is the supreme pure. So therefore he functions in an environment of cleanliness and purity. So the situation is not conducive for Krishna conscious activities. You know what I'm saying? It's not that just cleanliness itself is important. It's that the cleanliness is supportive of Krishna conscious activity. In other words, it's the pious element. So lack of it is so. In other words, if you have the qualities, but they're not connected to the Lord, that's piety. Right? Now, so those activities to which those qualities can manifest, that's piety. You know, if you deal with the matter correctly, then it allows that quality to manifest. Right? But you have to do it properly. So that's piety. You're just manifesting the qualities. It's just the Brahman element. But you're not. If you understand that Brahman element in connection with the Lord, then it becomes transcendental. If you don't, then it's only pious. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's all. Is this that the piety is that the activity is correct, so therefore it's getting the right result. You know, correct meanings according to the laws of nature. But unless that's done in connection with Krishna, then it's only pious. You know, it's not transcendental. And even though it is the Lord, if you don't recognize it, it doesn't take on that quality. Does that make sense?
So in this comprehension, we eliminate the possibility of the bad is like void. So it's, I mean, it's there's nothing there. So Krishna's not there, there's nothing there.
Yeah.
So it's basically a medium in which Krishna can function.
Yeah, I mean, the void is just a concept that there's nothing there, but there's no such thing as there's nothing there. There's always something there, you know. Because if you're going to say that there's, you know, it's all void, that means where does voidness sit? You know what I'm saying? Where is the potency for voidness to exist? So there has to be space. So in other words, you're only talking about ether. You know, but the point is so many other things are in ether also. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is they can't catch that. That is. Is that? Yeah. Two, every planetary system, there are many millions and trillions of living entities. They can see only when there is sunrise. This Gayatri mantra is, therefore, offering prayer to the Savita. Om Bhur Bhuva Swat Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Deva Siddhi Mahi. Sunshine. So sunshine is. But there are many suns, not only one sun. As there are many universes. Yes, ya prabha prabhavato jagaranda koti. Koti means innumerable, numberless universes. And in each and every universe there is sunshine. So the sunshine is reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. Yasya prabha prabhavato. When the bodily rays, shining rays of Krishna is there, then all these universes are generated. The universes are also generated. Right? So it's only because the Brahma Jyoti is there, because if the sun's not there, that means basically says, I think it mentioned within, you know, a few days everything will be finished. Right? So the point is it's the Brahma Jyoti that makes everything function. Right, not only it's entered everything, but it actually makes it work also. You know, it's the goals you're looking for, so it's everything. Right? You wouldn't act unless it was a goal. Right? You couldn't act unless you had that potency. Right? You wouldn't act if the action itself didn't generate something. Right? So all that's the Brahma Jyoti. Three, Vedanta says also, Janmadyasya yata. Brahman, Paramatma, they are expansions of Krishna. Krishna is the original. Mata, parataram nanyat, kincirasti, dhananjaya. This is the truth. Therefore, Krishna says that either you follow the Brahman path or Paramatma path. Either as a jnani or a yogi or as a bhakta. Therefore, Krishna says, mama vartmanu vartante, manushya, parta. Anyone actually who is seeking after self-realization, there are three divisions. Either you have to realize as impersonal Brahman, or as localized Paramatma, or as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if you realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically you realize impersonal Brahman and Paramatma also. Right? Because God has qualities, and He is the control and regulator of the universe. Right? But those are just, you know, nature of His existence. Right, His existence and His office as the Lord. But as a person, then if you have that, then you automatically have the others. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, you have the high court judge. So, he means, he's at the court, and so all the barristers and other judges, they all know him, right? But they only know that aspect. They don't have the other. It's nothing else is included. But when he goes home, for his family, they have the personal aspect, plus there's the aspect of him being a judge. You know what I'm saying? Because they have socially that aspect, but that's not how they relate with him. But it's also there. So if you have the personal, you have everything.
Could I connect this point with the point you were studying under the Brahma Samhita?
Brahma Samhita is quoted here.
This is could be quoted.
Yasya prabhaprabhato, that is.
Yeah. The Mana Samhita, when it was said that if you are engaged in Krishna consciousness, then you automatically are attending those needs, like the five main yagyas and the other ones.
The five?
Main yagyas for the five.
Oh, okay, yeah, the Panchamahapura. Okay. It means it's already, yes, same kind of principle. Means you always have these basic formulas, and they have many ways they apply. You know, so if you have Krishna, you have Brahman and Paramatma, so that means anything connected with Brahman and Paramatma are there in devotional. If you have devotion to the person, then the elements are there from Brahman and Paramatma are already there. Right? It means that you're transcendentally situated, that you're doing correct activity. It's automatic. Right? So that's why we focus on devotional service. But it doesn't mean that if there's, you know, certain knowledge or skills that will be helpful in Krishna consciousness, that we don't do them or we don't learn them. Right? It's just that they're not important on their own. You know what I'm saying? Because we can get into that. Let's say the person decides, okay, he wants to get an academic degree, and by this then he'll be able to, you know, preach in a certain way or certain circles. But then in getting into the degree, he may think that the degree itself has, you know what I'm saying? Just an example, maybe if you've had the experience. Discuss with somebody, you know, on an intellectual topic, who was a PhD before becoming a devotee, and they're just a devotee. They're just a devotee. And then if you bring reference to it, then they might go, oh yeah, well in the academic today they say like this, but otherwise they will not bring it up. But if you discuss the same topic with a devotee who wasn't a PhD, and after being a devotee becomes a PhD, then they'll always bring into the Krishna conscious discussion the academic viewpoint, as if it has any meaning. You know, it's just like, well, I was thinking here, you know, should build that, you know, but Betty Crocker, you know, she says that, you know, pancakes are best if it's like this. And he's like, we're not talking about pancakes. You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's, it has nothing to do with anything. Does that make sense? So this is then what we're meaning, is that devotional service already includes. So you don't have to worry about these things. So we overbalance. We create these mixes. So that's the thing, is that is the field and the activities of the field and the observable or experiential results of the field, those are only important in as much as they're connected to Krishna. But otherwise they don't stand on, oh, but because of our ego or our endeavor, therefore. I mean, because it's just like this. Means the person who has the PhD before becoming a devotee will understand, I wasted a lot of time. Right? But the devotee, when he goes for it, he doesn't want it to be seen as a waste of time. So he always tries to find some value of it and working it in. You know what I'm saying? But the point was, is he only did it because then if you have those letters and other people will respect you in that field, you can talk their language and do that. So you talk your language and that with them. Not with the devotees. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like that. You know, so anything like that. Let's say the person was, you know, some, you know, New Age kind of thing like that, then they take up devotional service. So it's not they're going to be referring to their tarot cards and this and that, but devotees, when they get into this afterwards, and they're all into these kind of things, and everything is done by these and all that. So it gets freaky. Does that make sense? So it's whatever skill you learn afterwards becomes more important than what was there before. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can talk to someone who is in the material world an actual, real, live manager, you know, a successful manager, and he won't bring up terminologies and all this, but you talk to devotees who've read a few books, they're always bringing up the terminologies, and you have to see it this way and that, and so, you know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that it's devotional service is what you're trying to do. And, of course, in that, then there must be identity, endeavor, and there'll be a result that's offered to Krishna. So, but they're secondary, they're only in support. So as soon as any of those secondary elements become primary, that's when it carries the wrong flavor. Right? Because, yeah, you have to do the active skill, but it carries the wrong flavor. You know what I'm saying? Because that becomes more important, because the efficiency of that particular skill or knowledge or its identity has to be maintained. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Yes.
All right, so is it an anartha when we don't see the devotional service as all-inclusive, and then you look somewhere else, and then...
Yes, it would be an anartha, because looking for somewhere else means that something else has a value, right? And Krishna mentions he is the value. So if we're looking that here's Krishna consciousness, then I have another value, that means we're not seeing that value in connection with Krishna, right? Even if it is to some degree, okay, ultimately we'll use it for Krishna, but why would we ultimately use it for Krishna? Unless we saw it as a value ourselves. Right? It means, in other words, nobody's going to take up something that their conditioning doesn't support.
Yeah, of
course. Right? So that would mean that in their conditioning they value that. That's why they do it. You know what I'm saying? So but unless they can see that endeavor and all that also in connection with the Lord, then it becomes difficult. Right, it becomes distracting. Even though the end result is ultimately for Krishna. But much of the time, if we don't see the whole process in connection, it may not get there, or it doesn't get there very well, or only part of it is Krishna conscious. Does that make sense?
In that same line of question, would be our lack of vision that is so universal applies to the whole universe.
Yes.
We cannot see how the science is subordinate to that.
Yes, yes.
Makes it a little...
Yes, different. Yes. Because there's always that idea, well, this is something there and it's valid on its own. No, but how is it valid on its own? It means here is that one has an academic analytical ability. That's great. The Vedas recommend it highly, right? Otherwise, why is this whole second chapter there? Right, Shankyas means how to analyze, you know, the situation you're in, or those later chapters, how to analyze, or, you know, the universe forms, you know, described in these other chapters, how to analyze and find Krishna. Right, so that's fine. That's not the problem. The problem is that the method of not wanting to come to a conclusion, you know, because the point is the conclusion is conclusion whether people accept it or not. You know, the fact is the fact. People may like the fact, they may not like the fact, but that's the way it is. You know what I'm saying? So when you say, oh, that's not politically correct, or you can't say like that, or, you know, those things, then what's the point? Then what's the point of using the medium? If it doesn't succeed in generating conclusion, it's not real intellectual endeavor. Because intelligence means you analyze. But the point is there's a bias in analyzation that you can't analyze in a certain way or can't do different things like that. So then that means that then the mind is involved. So then it's their preference. And because there's other people to support it. then that's the world, right? And it's just like, if you think about it, how often in the news, you know, they just take a whole year of news or a whole year of, you know, magazines that deal with, you know, news or, you know, something like that. How often do you hear about some academic? Very rare. Okay, maybe once a year when the Nobel Prizes, you know, are coming out, then you hear about this guy and that guy in science or, you know, something like that. Other than that, generally you never hear about them at all. So that means the common person, basically on the whole planet, goes this whole year without any reference to an academic. Right? Is that, you understand? So how influential are they on one level? You understand? And then we're going to say that this is going to be the thing that makes people accept this or not.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Is it also that if we take it that we have to convince them, then we are going into their area of their way of communicating, that means that we will then get response in that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And we will be confirmed that that's actually who we need to...
Yeah, yeah. Convince. Because means in talking to academics, it means if you're talking, you know, within the sphere of their... application of that knowledge, means within the university system, within the educational system, then there's certain rules you have to follow. But if you're talking to them as an individual, as an intellectual, then you can deal with the proper method of logic and conclusion. Because the point is, an academic as an individual can accept what you say. It's not that he can say that in his academy. So we're trying to make the individual's devotees. Mm. We're not trying to make the academy a devotee. The academy is a nonsense thing. Right? How can you have an educational system based on that it's not connected with God? How can that be scientific? Right? Since God is everything, how could that be? And the fun part is, you know, a lot of academics, at least the really good ones, are, you know, have some religious faith. I mean, there's some that are really, really demoniac, and so they stand out. In general, you know, they don't have much of a life, those guys. But in any case, the point is it's there. So they don't mind talking about God as an individual, because you have to remember, you take the same academy, go back 1,000 years. What was the academy?
The monastery.
Yeah, it was the monastery. It was the church. It just happened to be those clergy who were intellectual, right? Then they open educational institutions to study God's creation in connection with God, right? But because of not having that connection to the Veda, where they can actually explain everything, then there are areas left unanswered. And because they have faith in God, but they don't have enough information, then the problem is then those are areas you don't discuss. But people are intellectual, and as they have faith, then there's no problem. They get by, okay. Because there's so many intellectual areas you can go your whole life and not discuss and survive. You know, like that. I mean, say, you know, probably if you check, you know, probably 99 out of 100 grandmothers survived without knowing quantum physics. You know what I'm saying? It happens, amazingly enough. You know, they don't know anything about, you know, how you say...
Nanotechnology.
Yeah, nanotechnology, or about, you know, this biology that, what's his name, you know, Darwin was involved in.
Biotechnology.
Yeah, it means all these things. They get by no problem like that, you know. So the point is that... As a person, you can talk to them, and they're intelligent, so they can actually understand logically implied things. So the point comes is that because the church couldn't provide that, then these intellectuals, as they become less and less religious, then break off to try to find their so-called answers. which they actually never find. They are able to observe laws of God that are already there, but they're unable to understand that all they're studying is still God's creation. Just they want to study it from a particular perspective. If I can observe it, it's you know, that's what I want to intellectualize on. That's all. Yes.
And because the Western is not based on the Vedas, there are areas left open where they can see here lacks an explanation, and that's why need to go out.
Yeah, but even within the, even you take, okay, they split off, but there's so many things that the secular academy can't explain at all. But the God conscious academy can. You know, so there's things that has to be this or that. The point is it's all God's creation, so therefore. You know, so the point is it was a group of individuals, is what we're getting at, that made up the academy. There's a whole bunch of priests, and they formed the academy. Right? So now, if they're not priests anymore, you know, then it's still made up of individuals. So you don't have to change the academy. You have to change the individuals within it. You change all the individuals, you change the academy. You know, it's that simple. So it's not a matter of that, because the point is you don't have to talk to an academic and necessarily in his language. You have to be able to talk on the intellectual platform. Right? So if you can communicate and you can think and speak logically, right? Does that make sense? So actually studying logic and rhetoric would be more useful than studying, getting a degree in the academy. Right? That would be much more, because then it's something that they can relate to. Does that make sense?
And so much study, I mean, a PhD would have to be in your 35 or 40s to...
Yes, you spend so much time, and you spent so long speaking and, you know, how you say, as Arjuna said, how does he speak, how does he walk, how does he sit? You spend so much time doing that, that who wants to just give that up, right, you know? You know, saying that's one of the most difficult things we have here in the academy is, means on the philosophy it's not really a problem, though some people do catch one thing and get there. But when you get into the cultural elements, then it's difficult, because as you see, like we were looking at the Manu, you know, there's thousands of verses, but you know, I'd say it's 400 pages, right? 100 pages is in small print. That means 25% is in small print. Right? So, but the problem is that to find those that can work with something, you have to deal with the whole subject basically to be able to figure out the part you want. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so but the problem is the attachment to all of that. So to be able to go into something, study the whole thing, and then having studied it, figured out the part that you want, and then drop everything else, it's extremely rare to find someone who can do it. Right? So that's the difficulty. Is that once one has learned something on the mundane side, that, you know, what's useful in Krishna consciousness. That's why what's useful is what is ideally what one's developing. But much of the time, to get at that particular skill, if we have it, fine. But if we don't have it, you have to get it from somewhere else. Then that means you'll have, because they don't know what the essence is. You know, you want to have fun, get a, you know, college level book on English grammar. And then look at the parts of speech. Right? Except for a noun and the verb. Those are pretty clear definitions. Every other part of speech, you have it depends on all the other definitions to kind of vaguely put it together. Because this one will say, well, is this, that, but then it'll use all these other different things. Then you have to look at those words, those parts of speech, and this. And after, you know, dealing with it a long time, you get a general idea, but they can't give an exact clear definition. Like Vedic grammar, it's exact. Every part of speech is an exact place, exact meeting. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is this just general kind of thing. And they kind of know the vibe, the mood, you know. So
there are many gray areas, preposition, adverbs, adversion, preposition.
Yeah, but so why are they, because it's, that's the point, is that, but in the Vedic it's very clear, right? There's nouns and verbs, that's it. That's all there is. Then you have breakdown of sub-nouns. There are no, it means the verb deals with three aspects, time, place, and circumstance, right? But everything else is the nouns, right? So you have direct nouns that are directly connected to the verb, and then you have indirect nouns that are, you know what I'm saying? So the noun is connected to the verb. So a word that then clarifies that noun connected to the verb is a sub-noun, right? But if it also adds something to the verb, right, like that, then it's also a noun that's just connected to the verb. But if it's connected to the verb, we call it an adverb, then we say it's a, you know, whatever it is, you know, of the noun side. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is ultimately, it's all as, how to say, when you think of something, a word, the first thing that comes up is its principle, and that what it does. So that's the verb. Then, as it continues in that thought process, then it solidifies into those forms that obtain the activity of the verb. So those are nouns. You understand? So ultimately, everything goes back to verbs, because everything goes back to action. But you perform action with. Does this make sense? So therefore, there's an exact thing what each thing does. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is like that, because there is no solid foundation. Because why can the acharyas give such clarity? Because even big Indian Sanskritists can't give such clarity. You know, they'll do better than the Western grammarians, but they won't get that exact, because they don't have the connection with the Lord. So the point is because everything's connected to the Lord, it's consistent. That consistency is what makes the discussion solid. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty. You know, so as we're seeing here, is that all that consistency on the way of the qualities and all the, that's all the Brahman platform. Right? It means that we're working with mechanically. But that's all because it's the person. So if you accept the person, then all the complications of the Brahman or Paramatma platform are easy. You know what I'm saying? So if someone understands that, they may not know the fancy language in that, but they can express very technical, you know, philosophical points logically. You know, and that will be appreciated by an actual academic. You know, actual meaning, he's, you know, doesn't have some issue that he's trying to drive, but you know, he's actually thoughtful. He'll appreciate it, because it's truth.
I saw one Mayavad Gita in Kolkata, and it was using very, very advanced and fancy language, but if you really looked at it, it made zero sense. So that's kind of the reverse.
No, I didn't understand.
No.
It's all zero.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where you're supposed to read it, and your brain's just supposed to go like that, you know. So it's just, yeah. Then you. No, that's the whole thing. It's this fancy language that they don't know what it's saying. So that's the. I mean, most things that you read papers, and it's just huge page after page of just babbling. But then, you know, there's one or two sentences that get to the point. Mm. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Point four. So Krishna is not nirvisesha. He is savisesha. But this material world is actually nirvisesha. But it appears something like varieties. Right? Means the material world has no qualities. It's just dead matter. Right, but it's Krishna's Brahman having entered it that gives it its qualities. Mm-hmm. It means, but it appears something like varieties. Those varieties are simply the external dead forms of the actual forms that Krishna creates. Mm-hmm. Right? But it's Krishna's potency that makes them seem alive. The same thing, the example I have already given. A lump of matter, either you take earth or water or gold or silver, and you can make varieties of things, cause and effect, but that isn't even safe, right? Because it's not alive, like that. It doesn't matter what you take, and you can put it together and make all kinds of variety of things, but it's still just a variety of nothingness, right? But in the spiritual world, janmadyasya yata, as it is said in the Vedanta Sutra, the origin of everything, the cause of all causes, that is full of spiritual varieties. That is not nirvisesh, because it's actually alive. It means it actually does have that quality because it is conscious. Yeah. Does that make sense? So the point is that whatever qualities are there, because in the spiritual world it's connected to the Lord, that's why it has all the qualities. But here it's not connected to the Lord, so the thing doesn't have the qualities. Right? Means that the rock here is not the hardness. Hardness is the Krishna's quality that is manifesting through it. So the rock doesn't actually have any qualities that we attribute. It is actually the Brahman. Right? But in the spiritual world, because it's connected to Krishna, therefore it is manifesting that it does have that quality. You understand? It's very subtle, because the thing is we can see it. No, it's hard. But why is it hard? Because the Brahman is there. So it gives it that quality. But we think the rock itself is producing that. No, it's Krishna is producing that. Does that make sense? So but you can also see is we don't have a problem talking with anybody, any philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So it's here, as you take that, the Buddhist or the Mayavada is saying about nirvisesh is, yeah, it is nirvisesh. But then there's the, you know what I'm saying, where does that come from? Why is it there? Why is it all pervading? Why does it have that power? Why is there attraction? Why is the soul attracted to it? Because it is Brahman, but the point is you don't understand it's there. So you're seeing, okay, I don't know, none of this is seen in connection with the Lord, so it's all Maya. So therefore I got to get rid of all this Maya to actually find the Lord. No, you have to be able to understand the Lord in what's already there. Your non-understanding, that's Maya. Not that the thing itself is Maya. Mm-hmm. The rock isn't Maya. That you can't see it in connection to Lord, that's Maya. Does that make sense? So they just have to understand what it is that they're looking for.
So as a preacher, we must find their value. Show how our value already includes it.
Yeah, because the element is that's therefore the aspect when you're talking about the devotee sees all living entities equally, or he's a friend to all living entities. Right? Now, what will that? So that is seen as the advanced devotee. That is seen as the ideal, the preacher. You know what I'm saying? So why would that be important? Why would that be so effective?
Because then he's not looking at his conditioning, he's looking at the potencies of Krishna, which is possibilities.
Right, yes. So therefore the other person's conditioning, there's no good or bad. It's just all those are potencies of Krishna. So which ones are they? And then according to that, you glorify the Lord according to those ones, and they'll relate to them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, so like we were saying before, is that... I can't remember the name. Maybe something Moss or something. Yeah. The English Formula One race driver. 1960s.
Graham Moss,
yeah, something, some variety of like that. So, Prabhupada's talking to him, so, you know, because the race driver means cars, right? You know, so then cars, then into, you know, cars, and it's because he was English, and English cars, because India, he was in England, and so you had that, and then into this, and then into, you know, cars, and then because he's using his cars in speed, but then the speed generates fear, right? Because it's dangerous. So then in fear, then, okay, because up to this point, you connect each thing to the next. You know, you have the car, and it's got its engine, and you drive, and you got its wheels, and it's got the track, and oh, it's all like that. But then when you get to this point of where you actually get to the point of racing, which is who's the fastest, so the quality being looked for is God. But then the point is your security is also. So how do you make that connection? So without the connection, there's fear. Right? So therefore, fear is that point that is actually generated from the speed. Because you're coming in contact with God, but you don't know your relationship with God, so you're fearful. Right? So then, on fear, then he discusses what do you think of when you become afraid. Because now you're open for God. Anything before that, then it's going to be a discussion of what's right and wrong in the material platform. Right? So you use that to go through. You understand? So we're talking again. We're getting back to qualities. So it's sabhishesh, not nirvishesh. Right? You discuss the nirvishesh till you get to the sabhishesh, because you know the material world is nirvishesh. So you discuss it, but then you're trying to get at to the essence of that nirvishesh, which is sabhishesh. Mm. Right? The impersonal is actually personal. Mm. Because it has God's quality. Right? But it's also a form that they can appreciate. The impersonal form aspect they can appreciate. Because that's what they're dealing in. They're only dealing in impersonal. Does that make sense? So that means that anybody could talk to anybody. So it's not a matter, it's just a matter of you can communicate. Right, you're clear about Krishna consciousness, you know, and therefore you can speak this to anybody. So you could talk to anybody if you follow that path and start with the forms. But the forms are there because there's a value they add to their life. Get at the value, and then that value is where you connect with the Krishna. Then, as long as a living entity is conditioned, his body changes due to contact with matter. Matter is changing. So the living entity appears to be changing. But in the spiritual world, the body is not made of matter. Therefore, there is no change. In the material world, the living entity undergoes six changes: birth, growth, duration, reproduction, then dwindling and vanishing. Just wondering, because I was somehow always used to put... You used to put birth, growth, reproduction, duration, dwindling, vanishing. But they seem to put birth, growth, duration always like this. Reproduction, dwindling, vanishing. One starts to have doubts that reproduction doesn't have something to do with dwindling and vanishing.
Yeah, it's a natural consequence.
Yeah.
First.
No, that's there. Yeah, when there's reproduction, then you know that it's just a matter
of end of the line.
Yeah, that's it. You know, so yeah, or it's like, you know, you have the joke of the kids, you know, talking to someone else about why their parents are so, like, you know, unenthusiastic and old and worn out. And then it's pointed out and says, that's because of dealing with you. They were young and fresh before you came along. You made them old. Yeah. These are the changes of the material body. But in the spiritual world, the body does not change. There is no old age. There is no birth. There is no death. There all exists in oneness. Right? So it's all... That perfection of eternity. Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's the oneness. Notes. We are all one. We are all originally part and parcel of Krishna. But the living beings whose senses are uncontrolled cannot realize this. 5-7, because whose senses are uncontrolled cannot realize, because Krishna consciousness means engaging the senses in the Lord's service. So when we say uncontrolled, it means you're not engaging in the Lord's service. 15-7. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Right? So they're struggling because of that. If one's not, then where's the problem? Bhagavad Gita 2:69. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. And the time of waking for all beings is night for the introspective sage. Right? So again, here's because they're not controlling the senses, then there's no realization. So there's night time for that. And the sages who are, then it's day. Like that. Note 2. Realization of Krishna's transcendental form restores us to our original transcendental nature. So when we understand the form, it brings us back to our original form. Because otherwise, if you only meditate on Brahman or Paramatma, what are the results? What form do you get? Yeah, impersonal. You don't. So it's only when Krishna is a person, right, his form, then that restores the soul's original transcendental form. Bhagavad Gita 11:51. When Arjuna thus saw Krishna in his original form, he said, "O Janardana, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind and I am restored to my original nature." Right? Because that of serving and this, because the other forms, it throws them off. You know, how do you serve, technically speaking, how do you serve the universal form?
You can buy it.
Yeah, could be. One of the ways, yes.
What does Arjuna
being composed? Means now the mind is fixed on Krishna, because it can repose itself in Krishna's original form. But these others, the mind, because the soul is a person, so only dealing with simply the impersonal qualities, the impersonal qualities of Krishna is not going to be satisfying. Right? I mean, let's say someone wants to experience being good. Right? So how do you experience being good? By doing good. Yeah. Does that make sense? So you have to come to that, and now you've done something good, now you can, because you've done something in line with the nature of the living entity. In other words, they're a person. They perform activities, they get results. You know, those results are for some higher purpose. Right? So, therefore, he's composed in mind, because now it's connected back with the original personality of Godhead. Does that make sense? Three, the infallible abode is Krishna Loka, Bhagavad Gita 8:21. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having obtained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. Right? So what the others are looking for, that is the supreme abode. Because otherwise, unmanifest and infallible, what they'll get is temporary. Right? So in other words, the material is unmanifest. And there's no material entanglement. Temporarily. Right? But only Krishna's abode is actually there, there's no material manifestation. No, it's manifest. And it's infallible because there's no connection. Okay. Focus on the purport of Bhagavad Gita 15:17. So these have been focus on purport 15:16. Oh, I see, 16:17-18. Okay, so then these bold things are the quotes, portions of the purport that we're studying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so that last point there, then. Okay, we are all originally part and parcel of Krishna, but the living entities whose senses are uncontrolled cannot realize this. realization of Krishna's transcendental form restores us to our original transcendental nature, and the infallible abode is Krishna Loka, because that's where one can act within that infallible transcendental form. Okay, focus on purports of Bhagavad Gita 15:17. The Upanishadic verse runs as follows. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. The purport is that amongst all the living entities, both conditioned and liberated, there is one supreme living personality, the supreme personality of Godhead, who maintains them and gives them all the faculty or facility of enjoyment according to different work. Notes. The conditioned souls depend upon the all-pervading Lord for material necessities. They approach him through the Vedic sacrificial mantras. The liberated souls depend upon him for transcendental knowledge. They approach him through purified consciousness. Right. So material necessities, the Vedic mantras, and transcendental knowledge, like this, is all dependent upon the Lord. So, Gita 3:15. Regulated activities are described in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. Right? So the Vedas are describing regulated activities. That's sacrifice. So the sacrifice, the Vedas have come directly from the Lord, so that means that the acts of sacrifice are eternally situated in the Lord. Hmm. Yes?
I just made an observation that this Nitya Nityana verse is talking about Satchitananda, that Sat is the Nitya, Chit is the Chaitanya, and then Ego Bhavanam Vididati Kaman. That's the Ananda.
Okay, because the interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty good.
Depending on the word for all three.
Making a note of that. Should make a note of these. Give it to Pandit. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:12-17. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration. The Lord can be perceived in his subtle form within the heart by one's mind, since the Lord controls the minds of everyone, even great demigods like Lord Shiva. The Supreme Lord also assumes a gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations."
Maharaj, What is meant that one can perceive the subtle form within the heart by one's mind?
Yeah, it means, but the mind means, but the purified mind, right? It says, they approach him through purified consciousness. That's the note. So, means the conditioned souls depend upon the all-pervading Lord for material necessities, right? That's going to come from sacrifice, which means using the sacrificial mantras, right? And the liberated souls depend upon it for transcendental knowledge. They approach them through purified consciousness. So through the sacrificial mantras and through purified consciousness, the Lord is approached. Right? So then here, that's why then he's with the subtlety of sound. Right, the subtle form, along with life, hair, and primal sound. Right, because then sound will manifest as the Vedic mantra. Does that make sense? Right. So the living entity being there, the life airs also mean energy. You know, your endeavor and all that. So the soul is there, then he's able to perform those. So if he does those things properly, then he's able to perceive the Lord. Right. So either through the sacrificial mantras being used appropriately to please the Lord, or through purified consciousness, right? And so we recommend both. Right? In other words, we're performing the prescribed activities through purified consciousness. Right? So you're doing the activity, but not for the result, so therefore there's renunciation. And through purified consciousness, therefore there's transcendental knowledge. Does that make sense? Because from devotional activity comes Gyan and Vairag. Didn't get anywhere.
Not really, because my understanding is that the mind is just the sankhara vikara.
Yes, but the point is that's all you have to work with, right? You don't have something else. So that previous study was that the Lord descends himself, so through his instructions, therefore you can understand him. Because so it's whatever you're dealing with, the activity or the knowledge is imbued with the chit potency. That's why you can understand. But it's through the mind. You know, intellectually you can discuss, but the mind is what's going to see it. Right? The mind is what's going to see the Lord. Does that make sense? So it's still coming by the Lord's grace. But the point, what's being brought out here is that we're dealing with regulated activities of the Vedas, and the Vedas are coming from the Lord. So if you follow the activities recommended in the Vedas, in connection with the Lord, you'll realize the Lord. If you follow the regulated activities prescribed in the Vedas, you know, and accept their authority, then you'll get the pious results. But if you see them in connection with the Lord, then you'll get devotional results. It means you see the Lord. Right? Because that Krishna will say, you know, says that, you know, that such a person can see him face to face. Because that's the actual result. You know, getting all other facility and position and power and all these different things aren't actually the result of it. Those are side things. Those come along with it. But being able to see the Lord. That's why it said, like the cowherd boys, they're out playing with the Lord and frolicking and leapfrogging and stealing his lunch and, you know, doing all these different things. They're considered the most pious, greatest yogis and in the cosmic creation. Because they're seeing the Lord face to face, not only face to face, they can go and steal his lunch. You know? Now he's God. He's got to have a good lunch, right? You know, so it's like, you know, who gets that opportunity? You understand? So the point is the problem is not the mind. The problem is the mind not connected to the Lord. You understand? We avoid falling the trap of the thing itself is good or bad. No, it's connected to the Lord, it's good. It's not connected to the Lord, it's bad. But we don't define what's good, what's connected and what's not. You know what I'm saying? How to do that? The Lord gives that by direction in the Vedas. That way there's no speculation. Right? There's contemplation that we know the principle and we've been given an example, you know, that's generally in some very nice set the kind of example. Now we have to apply it to our situation where it may not be ideally very subtle. You know? So we have to be able to see that principle. That takes contemplation. Not speculation. Contemplation. Right? Then we can see, okay, here. And then we try it. And when we go to try it, we see part of it fits, part of it doesn't. So then we contemplate again. Okay, what? Until finally then it works. Does that make sense? But it's because we're trying to follow the Lord's order that the Lord gives that knowledge and detachment from the material. And because we do it to please him, therefore we're able to realize him or see him. Right? Then the mind is the best friend, right? But if it's not engaged like this, then it tends to be the worst enemy, like that. So it's kind of like, as we said, acceptance and rejection. It only does two things. So it's either best friend, worst enemy. It does nothing in between. We know. Does that work now? Yeah.
Okay. The point of the mind is the point of that song by Jagodirmana.
Yeah, that he's the you know, they're always trying to get the mind to look at things properly, like also on that Mana Siksha, Raghunath Das, and he's pointing out to the mind all the different ways that the mind engages itself in natural activities of the mind, but not connected with the Lord, and therefore then the mind, you know, it creates a situation of anxiety, right? And because the living entity identifies with it, then the living entity suffers also. Does that make sense? So in other words, the mind's not the problem, it's how the mind is engaged. Right? Because to do anything, even if you want to do something spiritual, you have to accept something and reject something else. Right? I want to cook a sabji. Okay, I take all the potatoes out of the basket. I reject you know, unqualified, you know, absolute rejection of all the kumquats. You know, you're not going to make a subji out of kumquats, right? No? Yeah, so it's just, but it's not that, oh, he's rejected my kumquats and like that, and I also went to offer him to Krishna. Yeah, but they're not going to make a subji.
Are there kumquats?
There's some funny little orange, it's about this big, but it's kind of like shaped like a grape instead of just being round.
Okay.
They're called Chinese oranges. Chinese oranges, yeah. They're funny little oranges.
I predict those two.
I don't know what they're for.
No, it sounds like jam.
They make jam.
You make jam. Really good jam. So they make really good jam. So you want to make really good jam, then you accept the kumquats, absolutely reject the potato.
Potato jam, that sounds like something.
Yeah, potato jam, I'm not sure. I'm not even sure if a Russian grandmother would even try that.
It could be in Denmark.
No. Potato pickle, but not jam. Does that make sense? In other words, the acceptance or rejection is all it does. It's just, if the acceptance is of Krishna, it's perfect. Right? Then, through the mind, you'll realize the Lord. You'll see the Lord. But if the mind rejects Krishna, then the mind is your worst enemy.
Yeah.
Why? Only because it's not accepting the principle of accepting Krishna.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So in other words, if the mind does what it means, engages itself in the Lord's service, then it's great. If it accepts Krishna, rejects Maya, then it's good friend. But if it accepts Maya, rejects Krishna, problem.
That's a misdeed, right?
Yeah. Because that's deeper. Because the intelligence, it just analyzes. And then from that, something may look logical or not logical. But where the problem comes is when the mind comes in and then makes a decision on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mind tries to reconcile the lack of understanding. Yes.
Sukhota Maharaj, he used to say something like the mind, actually there is only mind, and intelligence, this is one feature of the mind.
Yes.
Ego also. But
yes.
The main thing is the mind.
Yeah, no, the mind is the bigger circle, and intelligence falls together within that. But still, those aspects are there. So the mind, as I say, it accepts and rejects. But to accept and reject, you have to have a field to base that on, a situation. You know. So in other words, your false ego. Because if your false ego is one way, you'll accept it. Your false ego is another way. You know, it's like you have a pair of you go to buy a new pair of jeans, right? But they're so worn out, they're about to fall apart, right? So, now somebody with a particular kind of false ego, they would go, yes, and another kind would go, forget it, you know, right? So like that. So, and intelligence is then what will it be used for? You know, what are the applications and everything? So then it will do. But it's still the whole point of the false ego and the intelligence is to make a decision on what you accept and what you'll reject. You know, in other words, based on what your activity will be. Therefore, what result will gain and experience. But it's also their level layers of false ego. You can take all of its false ego, because the material mind is not real. So to identify with it is a false identity. So we identify with the mind, which is a false ego. We identify with the material intelligence, which is a false ego. We identify with the material false ego, which is a false ego. Does that make sense? And then there's the ultimate false ego is, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So the soul is covered by these four kinds of false egos. If you correct the one that I'm the controller and enjoyer, the other three will come in line. But because we're not doing that so efficiently, then we go after these little ones, you know. You want to attack the army, then if you can go march straight into the capital, great. But if not, you pick off all the little outposts until all that's left is the capital. And then, does that make sense? So that's the method. We know exactly what it is. So if on that you can act, great. Save yourself. If not, we get into the detail of all little aspects. And by dealing with all these little aspects, then gradually, we're starting to see the bigger picture, and then we can see the whole thing. So then we're able to make that transition from material perspective to spiritual. Is that okay? Yeah.
Mara, that's why we say that with transcendental knowledge we reverse, right? Because it comes and elevates the material mind to transcendental mind.
Because the point is the soul thinks and desires. That's just the nature of the soul. So the mind, intelligence, ego, the body, these are all natural to the soul. But they're only natural when they're connected to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. So therefore the soul has its original nature. And that's what we're trying to uncover. We're not trying to create one. We're trying to uncover what's already there. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like some of the ways of thinking about meditating on, I'll create that spiritual position. No, it's already there. You just have to be qualified to get to it. You know what I'm saying? So it creates a different approach. The mood's different. Right? If we're thinking that, no, if I meditate upon the, you know, residence of Vrindavan, then that will create that. No, it's already there. It's just a matter of, by meditating upon the residence of Vrindavan, then that purifies us. And Krishna is very pleased because they're very dear to him. Right? So therefore we advance. One, we get purified, and the other, we advance. You know what I'm saying? Then one's natural position is revealed. But it's not that by meditating on it, you create it. But then that's saying that I'm doing it. That karma creates bhakti, right? No, it's just by me doing these things, it pleases the Lord. Therefore, your natural position is revealed. That's why we don't have to focus on the revelation of our original position. We have to focus on pleasing Krishna through the instruction given by the great devotees, right? That's what this whole analysis before was. Basically, you could say the central point of it is, you know, it means God's a person in three, you know, God is a person, he has three features, right? He has his energies. Now, the point is when we see everything in line with the instructions that God gives, then we come back to that natural position. But we can't do that through the material energy. Only if the Lord comes, he descends himself and gives that knowledge. Only then can, practicing that under the direction of the spiritual master, can we revive that natural position. You know what I'm saying? So that's basically what's being said, but then so many little fine details from every angle. Right? Because now we can say this in 30 seconds, and there's nothing to contradict that. But otherwise, you know, if we said this 6 months ago, then the problem is so many little things that get in the way. But now you deal with such fine points, and you know what's left. And then it's just, you go, it's just straightforward point.
What prevents people from accepting this faith or the philosophy in this connection?
In this, basically, just this means that we have some kind of faith in the material nature, that it's what will make us happy. So there's some aspect that we're attached to that we don't want to give up. So therefore, we have trouble with something. You know, just like, you know, we talk a lot on this aspect of varnashram or morality or something being good, inherently good, because we think that it is, but then that's maya, it's illusion. It's absolute illusion to think anything in the material world is good on its own. You know, we say this is good, that's bad. You know, helping the old lady across the street is good, you know, putting a string up there so she trips over it is bad. Right? But why is one good and one bad? We'll just say, no, that's obvious. Everybody will say, yes, that's, so what everybody says? Since when do we care what everybody says? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter. So the point is that why it is, because we're supposed to be kind to other living entities. So harassing old ladies is not the way Krishna likes things. Because you're supposed to be kind to all living entities, and specifically you're kind to ladies. You understand? So therefore, that's why it's not done, because Krishna doesn't like it. That's the reason it's not good. But we'll say, no, it's just the social norm. The social norms are just left over something from whatever little bits left from their religious conceptions before. And that's based on Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so it's just like, let's say, you know, how does the guy get up to the 20th level and gets up there and slays the dragon and does all that? Does he do that by thou shalt not kill? No, it's all he does is kill. You know what I'm saying? So this concept of that, so the concept that it's not good, so then that the kid, all he does is that all day, he's been doing that for years. And then somebody annoys him and then he kills him. You know, and then it comes up, and, oh, the video games and they this and that. Because the whole point is what's the concept? It's only left over from people dealing with the religious element. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, without that religious element, then whatever you want to get done, you do. An animal, it sees you and he's hungry, he catches you and eats you. So, I mean, it's just normal. You know, it's not that he's sitting there, I catch him, no, that's not good. You can't do that. Right? The animal just, you know, he sees something to eat, he grabs it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, it's just, that. So that means is that you're not dealing on these religious principles. Is that okay? Okay. 13:25-26. Some perceive the Supersoul within themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruit of desires. Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Shutvan yebhya upasate. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. Okay, so here's something. Like we're approaching them through the sacrificial mantras and purified consciousness. So through chanting Hare Krishna, we purify them. But here, like some through meditation, some through cultivation of knowledge, and some working without fruit of desire. So these all take very great focus and qualities, you know, to be able to perform determination. But here is just those who don't have any of this, but have heard about the Supreme Person from others, right? And they tend to hear from authorities. They also will attain. So that means if you have the ability to meditate, you know, have knowledge or work without any results, great. It makes life a lot easier. But even if you don't, if you're just willing to hear from authority, hear about Krishna from authority, then one will also attain to that transcendental position. Right? So again, it goes back to, and so that for us works because we're chanting Hare Krishna. So approach it through the Vedic sacrificial mantras.
Would that be a reason for Bhaktisiddhanta complimenting Prabhupada for being such a good listener?
Because the point is, if you can listen, then you can speak. And if you can listen, you can contemplate. Right? Because from hearing, then comes contemplation and practice. Right? And from that comes realization. You know, you first get understanding by continual application of that understanding, then you get realization. So that makes it just so much easier to speak. So the point is you will practice well, you'll be able to help others practice well. But if you don't hear well, you can engage your conditioning, but if at some point it gets off, you know, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had so many people who are expert like management or collection. And, you know, much of the time as far as position or facility, they get more than sometimes others. Right? Like that. But the point is if they didn't know the philosophy well, they could get deviated. You know? Because then they're worried about their position, and because they've collected the money, now they should have a say in how it's spent. No, you're the collector. Someone else is the spender. Right? You know how to collect it. They know how to spend it. Yeah. I think probably even made those kinds of things with some devotees. Some big collector is complaining about another person spending. Prabhupada says, no, he knows how to spend, you know how to collect. So you stick to collecting, he'll stick to spending. Right? You don't know, because I think it was, there were so many flowers in Mayapur. You could probably say that whole area where the temple is sitting now, that where the fence is, you know, because you had the front gate, and you had the lotus building. So there was a road down the middle, and on each side it was all flowers, you know, huge amount of flowers. So some of the collectors and others thought that this is a waste of money. Why aren't they buying, you know, potatoes or something? But Prabhupada says, no, they know how to spend money, because they're making it beautiful. This is the Dham making it beautiful for Krishna. Says, you know how to collect it, so you collect it, and you have faith, they know how to spend it. Like that.
Isn't that how a husband-wife dynamic works?
Yeah. Very good. Very good point. See, he's getting to the essence.
Essence of Vedanta.
Yeah. It's actually Vedanta, this. Okay.
What is the difference between meditation and contemplation?
Meditation is where you're thinking of the Lord of Self, you know, the person. Contemplation is you're contemplating the instruction. You know, so a devotee says, yeah, nice idea, I'll meditate on that. No, it should be, he should say, I'll contemplate that. It's just, you know, I mean, but it sounds more yogic. You know, I say, meditate, yes. And, you say, I'll contemplate, it's kind of like, everybody contemplates. The dog is also contemplating. He's looking at your ankle, and he's contemplating.
In meditation, there is no option, it's fixed.
Yeah, it has to be fixed. It's just, it means, when we say meditate, we mean meditate on Krishna. In other words, we're trying to see Krishna in everything. That's our meditation. Right? But to do that, we may contemplate the various ways that Krishna could be seen.
Yeah.
And then seeing, then that's our meditation.
So this is like the mind, it can contemplate.
The mind can contemplate, it can meditate. It just means it focuses on something. So one is you're focusing on, meditation generally means you're focusing on the form or the person or the you know, some aspect, that personal aspect. While the contemplation means you're going through a process to try to find that.
Yes.
Like that.
Yeah,
contemplation will lead to. But it's not that they're not always going on. Like Mother Yashoda's always contemplating how to please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to make some new clothes or some new ornaments or a new arrangement in the house or anything, you know, something unique to find and get. And, you know, like that. She'll hear about something from some far off place. It's nice. She'll want how to get that for Krishna. You know, so she's always contemplating that because she's always meditating on Krishna. So they're dynamic. They're always going on. You know, because contemplation is more the activity. Meditation is more the, you know, your result.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai.